one thing that was, and that was back in the like mid-80s, like 85, 86 time frame. So the process itself was not fun. It was Fortran doing math. But what I did realize is that before that, I always had to be next to the machine, next to some kind of equipment. And I had to be in that room. I had to be in that building.
And that's Igor Androsov, Technical Architect Director at MuleSoft Japan. I'm Julian Duque, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast, and here in the podcast, we share stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we are going to talk with Igor about different MuleSoft products, especially API Experience Hub. But before, we will start just as we left off, and we often do, with his early years.
I think it goes way back when I was, well, I'm originally from Ukraine, and I started my education in Telecommunication Institute in my hometown. We had a courses that required calculating circuitry, like a radio, like a different kind of nonlinear circuitry. Mm-hmm. And we had to go program. There are some differential equations that need to solve, and we had to do some programs in it. I really didn't like it at the time, but one thing that was, and it was back in the like mid-80s, like 85, 86 time frame. Mm-hmm. So the process itself was not fun. It was Fortran doing math. But what I did realize is that before that, I always had to be next to the machine, next to some kind of equipment. And I had to be in that room. I had to be in that building. Yes. But here, the computer was in a completely different place in my town, but it was kind of far away. But I was sitting in my university, and I was typing in the screen, and I was getting responses, and I could compile things, right? And so mm-hmm. I realized, wow, if this is a work that I could be on an island somewhere, but work anywhere I want to be, because this could be connected.
Wait. So you were thinking about like living the remote life way before we got it into it.
It was way before the internet, yes.
Wow, this is amazing. I mean, I never thought about that possibility. I thought I was maybe going to be attached to an office or something like that. Never crossed my mind to be working from an island. Did that dream come true, maybe?
Yeah, many years later, yes. We currently live in the dream.
Currently living the dream.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, of course. To be in this spot, I mean, many things have happened. So yes. So continuing with your early career, what was pretty much what triggered you to start pursuing a career in technology?
Well, I mean, I was always interested in building things, and I was kind of tinkering with all kinds of electronics, even in my childhood, building like sound equipment or radios and things like that, taking things apart because there was no computers at the time. Mm-hmm. But when I got to sort of United States later on, immigrating, there was certainly looking for, okay, what am I going to do? And so somewhat natural path was, okay, well, let's go to electrical engineering because it was kind of closely related to what I was doing back in my country.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I just kind of started there, but there was a few computer courses in the process that I took, and I decided to switch over to computer science kind of early on in the university. But it took I had a long journey in American universities, had to pass through several of them transferring before I actually graduated.
Yeah, and when you had your first experience coding, you mentioned that it wasn't fun. It was just math. When this became something fun for you, something interesting?
I think it was kind of when I encountered the more like a personal computers, because there was mainly like a mainframe type of things that I had experiences with initially. But coming to America, personal computers, IBM. And at the time, I think my first computer was actually Amiga 500. And that computer had multi-threading. And that's why I actually encountered programming language C. I think the compiler was Lattice C, I believe. And I realized there was multi-threading and you could do many things on the screen. You don't just run one program, but you actually have screen with icons and you can move them around and you have a desktop and you could actually program these things. And one of the first things I did was actually the computers at that time didn't have Russian alphabet. So I actually created a Russian alphabet for that Amiga too. So I could type in like Russian letters.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. And in these early days, when Salesforce appeared in your life, how you started within the Salesforce ecosystem? Because I bet you have a lot of years within the ecosystem, right?
Yes. So before Salesforce, I've done a lot of traditional software engineering jobs, working in various languages and also platform. Among them was OS2 operating system and Linuxes of various types. Oh. Salesforce appeared to me in about 2008. I was an integration specialist and I was working, actually I was working somewhere in Florida, I think it was Universal Studios. We were building some integrations for them. And I was working at Universal Studios in Orlando. And some friends of mine kind of pinged me and said, hey, you know, we started starting this company, which I'm going to join this partner company. There's this thing, Salesforce. Like, what's Salesforce? Mm-hmm. Is that some kind of sales thing? I'm an engineer. So how it started is they needed somebody to help with some Java code, and I helped out a little bit. And then I actually kind of started an interview process in 2008, and I joined in 2009. And that's the first time I encountered things like Visual Force and Apex in the beginning, and cloud in general. I was working in the prem before, so all of the servers had to be installed somewhere on data centers. And this was my first entry into working with AWS and Salesforce being public cloud kind of systems. And it became very interesting. And I immediately said, okay, well, that's it. I'm just going this way, because I really didn't like to be an infrastructure specialist. And this really removed all this stuff. It's like, oh, I could just build things in the cloud and not really worry about networks so much, or I mean, I could just produce value right there, build my application and deploy it, and not ask five people how to get access to this server or that server. Like, this is awesome.
That's great. And also, you have been deeply involved within the community as well. How you started with that path, like working, organizing a community and getting into this?
Yeah, that's an interesting kind of a segue. How it began is I joined a partner company called Aperio. Mm-hmm. And my early projects were actually in Japan. And so I was based in Japan for a few years as an expat.
Okay.
And I came back to the United States in 2013. And right around that time, Jeff Douglas, who you probably know well,
of course,
was also working at the same company. And he sort of pinged us, like, hey, do you want to start a group with me in Tampa for Salesforce developer group? Because there wasn't any at the time. And I said, sure. And so we started. That's how we started. I was a co-founder, co-creator, and he was a leader, co-leader and leader. And so initially, that was two of us. And then, of course, Jeff joined Salesforce a few years later. And then I became a single leader of the Tampa developer group. And that's how it started. So that's kind of the story.
That's beautiful. And as an anecdote for all the folks that are listening to us, you were the first person from the Salesforce ecosystem that I met in one meetup in St. Pete, Florida.
Yes, that's true. Wrong with that. Yeah, that was a long time. I think it was maybe 2014 or 15. And
I think 15, because I moved to the US in 2015.
Okay, yeah. And I think you were running, I believe why I was there is you were doing a Node code school or something like that, some kind of a Node.js type of meetup. And it just so happened to be at the time, I was part of the mobile team at Aperio, and we were building mainly a lot of native applications on iOS and Android. And that was my world, like building apps on mobile phones. But they were always linked to Salesforce, and we had to build APIs. And some of the projects started to cross over to Node, and I had to start doing Node. And I was learning Node rapidly and Heroku, like building APIs on Heroku with Swagger and Node.js. And so that's why I was there to kind of pick up my knowledge and also learn about the ecosystem.
That's beautiful. And then when I joined Heroku, we met again, and now we were more close to the Salesforce community.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember you came up with a couple of meetups as well in Florida.
Yeah, we are missing you here. I mean, you are a great asset for the Floridian or Tampa developer community.
Yeah, certainly. I miss those days of Trailblazer community times. There was a lot of fun going to the Dreamforce events. We had to take a long break for me personally due to pandemic, but we are essentially restarting now, so it's good.
You joined Salesforce in what year?
I joined Salesforce in 2020, and it was right before the pandemic started. So we actually didn't know it even existed, because when I came to, it was in January of 2020, and I started in February. So I roughly came in, and at the end of January, I was a speaker at a Japan Dreaming event, the Trailblazer community event here. So I was invited, happened to be invited that. So just before I joined Salesforce, I could speak freely as a sort of a developer group leader, who I handed over to my other co-leader back in Tampa, and then joined. And a month later, lockdown happened. And so since then, we were kind of on an island here in Japan.
Nice. So how was the change to coming back to Japan? Are you also part of the community in Japan? Is there a strong Salesforce community, or is different than what's going on here in the US?
I would say yes. It's a pretty strong community. There are actually a number of different groups. I believe in Tokyo, because it's a very large city, it was probably allowed to have as much as like 25 different Trailblazer community groups of all kinds, including architects, developers, there's admins, there's women in tech, or women admin group or something like that. There was a lot of groups, and it's very active, and there's quite a few MVPs from the Japanese community. And they do regular meetings in major cities all over Japan, like in Osaka or in Tokyo, obviously. That's most of the activities happening. But of course, as an employee, I participated in those events, but kind of quietly. Because when we're speaking as an employee, there is obviously some legal stuff that we need to take care of.
Yes, you have, if I'm not wrong, around 27 certifications, and also you are 24 times a Trailhead Ranger, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that's I guess it's counting the internal badges as well.
Of course, for the folks out there that don't know, we also have some badges that we get for content that is not publicly available. How you got to this place? Do you have like any recommendation for the folks out there that are studying, learning with Salesforce, and they are maybe trying to get some sort of way to study or how to organize their time? Because it seems you have put a lot of effort in this.
Well, I would say definitely commit to a lifelong learning, right? If you're in an industry like ours, like IT, anything to do with development, software, today, especially with AI and generative and everything else that's going on, we bound to be in a journey of life learning. And as such, you just basically consider committing time that you can, whether that's 10 minutes, 20 minutes every day, and do some learning, whether that's Trailhead badges or perhaps some other learning platforms to pick up skills and knowledge, because those would be critical. That's also, I only kind of do things and learn things that I'm kind of curious and interested about. Trailhead was really a turning point for me back in like 2016 or so. I was, as I mentioned, I was part of the mobile team, and I was primarily kind of walked away from Salesforce development for about 4 years of my career. Still working for Salesforce partner, but primarily focusing on iOS and native applications and API development. Mm-hmm. But Trailhead came on the scene in 2015 strongly, and I sort of realized that, now I can really keep up with all the things that's happening in Salesforce, because before that, it was very difficult to do, and it was kind of getting like hard to keep track of things that you need to know to be effective developer. And here's, you can like, new feature came along, a new badge. You could just do hands-on and like, okay, that's how it works.
Yeah, this is an ever-evolving and ever-growing product. So it's very, very difficult to...
And now with Trailhead Go, you could probably do, anywhere learning, right? Like airport or anywhere you have a minute, at coffee shop, you're waiting, you just do the badge and so on.
That's the key. See, that's the key in there.
Yeah.
Let's get now into the present. What are you doing right now? What are you working on right now?
So I'm working at MuleSoft. So when I joined Salesforce, I joined a MuleSoft Asia Pacific team. It was part of Salesforce, and that was my understanding, but I actually didn't know I joined two companies at the same time. It was integrating, so I had to do onboarding and Salesforce with the Salesforce Ohana way, and then onboarding on MuleSoft, the Muley way. So it was kind of like this baptism by fire. And obviously, MuleSoft was a bit new to me. I did integration before, so Java integration isn't new, but the MuleSoft as a platform was slightly new. I've seen it and used it in a few customer engagement prior to joining. So I had some idea, but certainly didn't realize how vast it is and as a platform and how complex it is. And so I'm a part of the customer success group. I help our customers to do best practices and implement MuleSoft platform, build MuleSoft integration in the best way possible so they can have a good adoption.
Beautiful. And now in MuleSoft, besides that, are you working on any specific product or just with the architect team? Or what's your favorite part of working with MuleSoft right now?
I would say, well, there's a lot of things happening at MuleSoft as well as Salesforce. And basically, keep track of some of the products is kind of fun way for me to gain specialties, because in CS, we try to, as architects, being on that kind of vast platform, we try to specialize. And so we have some specialties in different product line. Like we have, for example, a runtime fabric specialist, which is Kubernetes-based container kind of deployment, mm-hmm. or perhaps there's those that specialize in API development and design. I'm interested more on the developer side, because MuleSoft is what another sort of a little bit of a shocker for me after so 10 years working on the cloud and Salesforce. I didn't realize how blessed I was not dealing with networks and all kinds of infrastructure stuff. And coming over to MuleSoft, you inevitably, even if you're a MuleSoft developer, you get to touch these things even in a cloud way, because depending on the deployment, you might need to know AWS or Azure or Kubernetes mm-hmm. to be able to effectively run this platform. So this dynamic, although interesting, is also challenging for me, because I dropped my infrastructure skills years ago, just coming out of class, like, I'm going to forget that. So there was a bit of learning. So that's kind of fun part. And another great thing about Salesforce that I sort of enjoy a lot is our VTO, ability to contribute skills for good. So those projects are actually development projects that I still get to do development on the platform that we choose to work on these projects, like Salesforce or maybe Heroku or at MuleSoft, depending which, it's basically a choice.
And are you working on any specific VTO project right now?
Yeah, I've been part of the what we call an Impact Labs, and also the Open Source Commons projects, which is building open source products and packages for our nonprofit community. As you know, like 1-1 model, mm-hmm. Salesforce contributing 1% of product, 1% of time, and 1% of revenues to the for good. And I'm also part of this initiative of contributing my Salesforce skills, the developer skills, helping nonprofits to do that. And so I was part of the Impact Labs Climate Justice project from 2022 to this year. And we continue evolving that package, which is called Grant Content Kit. It is on GitHub, open source, and part of the commons sprints, that community sprints that we have at Salesforce. And then this is kind of a continuing ongoing process right now. The project that will start now in the same Impact Labs is actually called Salesforce Accelerator AI for Impact. And I'm Whoa. Kind of excited to be part of that, which is all bringing all the generative AI into the mix.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe we can add all of those resources to our show notes so our listeners know more about that. I've been wanting to get into the open source grant that we have. Maybe we will need to get some time to talk about that, and maybe why not have a full podcast episode about open source here at Salesforce.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yes. As a Salesforce developer that doesn't know anything about MuleSoft and wants to start learning or using any specific MuleSoft product or start implementing MuleSoft, what could be a good first step?
Well, I would say if you are a Salesforce developer that is code, like you're a coding person, meaning like you do Apex and Visual Force, then your track will be most likely leading towards AnyPoint Platform and AnyPoint Studio or Code Builder, as now new tool have been released. So certainly try it out. And there are a number of resources out there. We have released a few Trailhead badges recently that allow you to do a hands-on challenges, which will get you started on something like an API design. And if you haven't done that before, that would be probably a starting point, because MuleSoft is, after all, about designing APIs and implementing APIs. And so you would have to learn syntaxes like RAML or Open API Specs, Swagger type of stuff. And the next step is obviously implementing it. And so there are so certainly a lot of resources. There's also books that people wrote that I'm aware of, like the MuleSoft for Salesforce Developers. That certainly might be, if you're into book learning, that might be a path to do.
A couple of teammates.
Yeah.
Shad and Alex wrote that.
Yeah, I would suggest to really dive into hands-on and try it out. The platform is, you could sign up for free as a 30-day sort of platform, and you could deploy your applications in Cloud Hub. Obviously, on your local machine, you could still run, if you're using old Studio, which is Eclipse, you could still run the same applications locally and certainly experience how it works and what it is happening. That's one sort of a path to go about it.
Nice. And now for folks that have way more API experience and they want to like showcase all the different internal and external APIs they have and do some sort of API management, what other tools MuleSoft can offer to these folks?
Well, so MuleSoft, I would say on AnyPoint Platform, which is what the platform called officially. So on AnyPoint Platform, there's a full lifecycle development tool set from like API Designer to API Manager. All of these tools are mainly on the web. So you interact with them through the browser. So you could do all the API management and manage your runtimes, implementations, monitoring on the web, as well as offload them to your monitoring tools. Now, from a developer side right now, obviously, Studio is our kind of a default development environment, which is Eclipse-based. And as I mentioned, Code Builder would be the tool to use for the future reference, including the what's upcoming, the generative AI, the Einstein code generation. So you could basically talk to your or type your requirement for your API, and it would just simply build it for you.
Yeah, the ACV, as it is called internally. I really like what we are doing on the web IDE aspect, both for Salesforce Code Builder and AnyPoint Code Builder. Great, great tools. You mentioned before offline another tool that is pretty new, which is API Experience Hub. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Sure. Yeah. So within MuleSoft ecosystem or on an AnyPoint platform, we have always had and still have API portals. And that is how you discover the APIs. Like I can build the best API, but if nobody ever finds it and use it, then it's kind of pointless, right? Like, yes, it's awesome, but no one knows about it. So to people who know about it, we have this tool called Exchange, which was original API portal. There's public portal and private portal that you can do with this. And even every API you develop and build has its own, for each API, there's its own portal. If you choose to enable it, there's a portal attached to it even. But that is very restrictive. It's kind of the branding and everything on this site is the same as MuleSoft offered. You could change a few things, colors and logo, but that's about it. a lot of customers want to have a branded experience, like a sort of their own perfect pixel perfect experience on the web. And for that, we have this new tool, which is what you mentioned, API Experience Hub, which provides exactly that experience. And so what it is actually one of those situations where we, being a part of Salesforce ecosystem and part of the Salesforce company, it is actually crossing the boundary between MuleSoft and Salesforce, because Experience Hub actually deploys Experience Site, which is, if you're familiar, digital experiences on Salesforce. Yep. But you build it all inside MuleSoft AnyPoint platform. So AnyPoint platform actually has included the site builder tool, like you have on an Experience Cloud. It's been brought in inside AnyPoint platform. And so you can kind of design and build this portal on your own. And it's really, with a few clicks, you can build a very nicely styled, templated portal, right? And then it deploys it and runs it within your Salesforce org as site, right? So that's a kind of a, I would say, short description. And obviously, as you do more with this tool, you would need to have some Salesforce experience now, so not just MuleSoft. Yes, you do in a MuleSoft, but now it's kind of crossing over to a different platform, right? So
that's amazing. So for the folks out there that have Experience Cloud experience, they can start using API Experience Hub. That's a lot of experiences in one sentence.
Yes. And that is one of those. So this is kind of a midway out of the box experience that you could build, which also could be somewhat restrictive. And prior to that, we still have, and I think MuleSoft still offers this product called ACM, which is API Community Manager, which is a predecessor to Experience Hub, which is completely built on top of Salesforce. So effectively, we install a managed package. Even today, we do that as well from Experience Hub. But ACM was a completely just a managed package you install in the org and connect it to your AnyPoint platform. And therefore, you start exposing APIs. But that experience we found with a lot of customers, or MuleSoft customers, I should say, brought it a challenge because, as I said, it's crossing over to the other platform. And if you are having primarily a MuleSoft team who's familiar with AnyPoint platform, they're comfortable with it, they've never seen Salesforce, and now suddenly they are brought into the experience, like, how do you build this portal? How do you build Lightning Web Components in this if you want to create a custom flow, for example, for approval process or something like that? So now you need a Salesforce admin, a Salesforce developer to do that. And so that experience still exists for customers who choose to go that route and build really, really sort of a branded, almost like their own site in a way. But that does require both skill sets in the team that implements that. And that's been challenging for many customers.
So that means Experience Hub is not a drop-in replacement for Community Manager. Those two can kind of still be a solution for having a portal.
Well, yeah, you would have one or the other. I wouldn't imagine you would have both, but obviously, the Experience Hub is a new iteration on this, and it will continue evolve to get more features and functionalities and more customization. Right now, it's somewhat limited. It's a first release this year. We I think it was GA'd earlier this summer. And so this will evolve, and this is mainly for fitting in that gap where customers want to have, I don't want to customize too much. I don't want to build custom Lightning components, but I want to build my own sort of branded site that looks like my company. And so that's where that's coming from.
Got it. Yeah, I thought it was maybe going to replace the other product, but it sounds like that's not the reality. Well, Igor, now changing a little bit the subject, while you are not working on integrations or earning new badges on Trailhead, or new certifications, what else do you do? What do you do for fun?
For fun without Salesforce, you mean?
Without Salesforce, yes, like as a hobby.
Sure.
I know you have a lot of fun with Salesforce. I can tell.
Yeah, I have a lot of different, I would say before the pandemic, there was a lot of different things I was involved in and like to do, and I still like them. But since pandemic, a lot of things have changed, and I always like to travel. So we try to do you know, things with nature and hiking type of stuff, anything to do with ocean. I'm a scuba diver, so I do diving in different places when I get a chance. That had to stop during pandemic because a lot of these places were not open and travel wasn't an option for the last 3 years, I would say. But hopefully now it could restart again. But those are the things that I kind of enjoy. And more recently, right now in Japan, we're having a harvest season. So there's a lot of things happening. We're about to harvest rice soon. Mm. And so I've been exploring a lot of local cooking and flavors and just enjoying cooking for the family and kind of making different dishes.
That sounds great. So now you know there is no excuses to go outside. There is no more... At least we hope no more pandemic or lockdown, so you can get back to traveling. And if you get back to this part of the world, let me know so we can get together again and have a cool conversation in real life.
Absolutely.
Igor, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for sharing your story and looking forward to have you in the Salesforce Developer Podcast in the future.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure and thank you for inviting.
And that's it. If you want to learn more about the show, head on to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear all the episodes and read the show notes. Thank you, everybody, and talk to you the next time.